Welcome to the Real Triathlon Podcast. I'm your host, Garrick Lowen, here with Nicholas Chase and Jackson Lund.
Welcome to the Real Triathlon Podcast. We are Jackson Laundry and Nicholas Chase. Garrick Lowen is currently out. Actually, he's MIA right now. He was on a ferry last time we knew, headed to, am I right, British Columbia, Victoria Island? Is that where, or Vancouver Island, Jack? Is that where he's going?
I think so. That's the only big ferry I know of. And we haven't heard from him for about 8 hours. So the ferry may have blown up and, sunk. Who knows? So hopefully not.
Oh man, but first some current events. So did you see that there was a train that actually derailed and exploded over Tempe Town Lake where they have Ironman Arizona? Did you see that?
Oh yeah, I saw that that bridge was like on fire because of that.
It was insane.
Was that like a tanker, like a freaking, what was that thing carrying? It didn't have passengers, did it?
No, there weren't any fatalities that were reported yet, so hopefully that stays the norm. But holy cow, the world is seeing some crazy stuff right now, amidst of the obvious global pandemic. What have you been up to the last couple weeks? Actually, no, we talked to you last week. You were at camp with your fellas and you came back from that, and now you're getting ready to do a race tomorrow. What's about? Tell us about the race.
Yeah, so I did camp. I did a time trial up there. That was fun. We're going to throw up a video, hopefully still, on our YouTube channel. I've just got to get my ass around to doing it. And the race tomorrow is a freaking triathlon, man. It's a swim, bike, and run. It's a local – there's a triathlon coach, club owner, really involved in the sport dude named Barry Shepley. He used to do the announcing for ITU World Tour stuff, and he put together this pro race, and he got a sponsor to throw in some prize money. So we got me, Taylor Reed, Cody Beals, and then there's some other pros from Ontario as well, Mikhail Sternathan, Andrew Bolton, and there might be one or two others. And then also Tamara Jewett is on the women's side, and we're doing there's just the one prize purse, so it's a chase style race. So she gets a lead, and we try to chase her down. So it's not quite a normal race because we do the swim first in a separate location, and then we get time splits, and then everyone starts in the order they finish the swim. So like Tamara will get her lead for the equalizer, and then it'll start like first male. And then if there was somebody like 10 seconds back, they go 10 seconds later. So whoever crosses the line first is the winner. So it's going to be pretty sick for sure.
Is it going to be all TT bikes or draft legal road bikes? What is that format on the bike?
Yeah, so it's a 2K swim, then a 54K bike, and a 15K run, and it's non-drafting, 20-meter draft zone, so we're keeping it super spread out because there's not too many of us. We got lots of space, and it's a tough bike course, man. It's just constant hills, like short hills, steep hills, but like always you're going up or down, so it's super, super tough course.
That's awesome. I love courses like that, man. You're gonna kill it.
Oh, it's going to be hard. It's going to be fun. But that was the TT I did last week was a good tune up for that, because that course was also hilly with short hills, just like always going up or down, like not as much as this course, but it's going to be hard, man. It's also, it's kind of technical because there's three loops and each one's 18K. And on each loop, we have a U-turn and four 90 degree turns. So there's quite a bit of turning and hills and everything. It's going to be interesting, but course I'm going to take those boys down. I mean, once this airs, all of the race will have already happened, so I might be looking like a total fucking idiot here, but
now we'll do a recap next week and talk about how it went, and I'm sure you'll represent Ventum, Alto, First Endurance, Zoka, Rudy Project, Blue 70, and did I miss anything?
Body health,
you're going to represent all those sponsors, get them up on the podium. Bellafix. Good job, man. Yeah. You always got to look out for those who are looking out for you.
Dude, you nailed it. I think you freaking hit my sponsors up quicker than I would have. That was impressive.
Yeah. We share a lot of them. So like, it kind of works out okay.
It's true.
So that's so awesome, man.
Enough about my race. What about your freaking crazy? What are you doing, running 1,000K or something ridiculous?
No, thank goodness I'm not doing anything that stupid. I did read a book where it's by Scott Jurek, just because I'm doing an ultra, and it's called North, and he ran the length of the Appalachian Trail and beat the course record by 3 hours barely, and it was just like 2,000 something miles. It was insane. But anyways, I've been trying to get all fired up on ultras, so I've been listening to books and talking to all my pals. I've coached tons of people to ultras and stuff. So I really want to put myself through one, obviously. I've run ultra distance before, but not like it's been spread out over 24 hours. So I've done like 40 miles over Ragnar stuff. But this will be in the Tusher Mountain Range in kind of central-ish Utah. It's a place called Eagle Point. It's east of Beaver, and there's 21,000 feet of elevation gain with 100K of distance. And I've run probably 60% of the trails out here so far. So I'm confident that it's going to suck. It's going to be a lot of run, hike. I've got trekking poles. I picked up an ultra marathon like pack sponsor, like hydration and lighting, called Ultraspire, and so they're based out of Utah, like right down the street from my house. So super awesome. I get to represent a local company, and that's, you know, kind of why I wanted to get Infinite on board too, which is our interview for today, the CEO, because, you know, simplicity is key when it comes to ultra marathoning and any endurance event, and it's an eating contest out there. So I'm going to have to be real diligent on eating the old food and shoving the old Snickers down the old gullet as much as I can. Actually, probably nothing so complex as Snickers, but I'm nervous, man. This is fun. I mean, those little race nerves, you know the deal. Like, we haven't raced in a while, and
oh yeah,
it's going to be nice to do something.
Yeah, I feel the same thing right now. I'm like going to be having a hard time sleeping. That's how it should be the night before a race.
It's going to be awesome. I bet Cody's going to sleep.
Daydreaming about championship and daydreaming about winning. And then it spirals into daydreaming about winning world championship somehow someday. And that's why we can't sleep before a race.
It's a snowball effect. So let's hop into our episode of the day. This is a good one. So I've worked with Infinite for the last like 7 or 8 years. I've seen them grow. I've seen the new products come and go. They're super cool. And it's not just as much as me trying to like plug a sponsor, but it's mainly like, I know that their story is incredible. Like, any of these companies that start out from the ground up takes a lot of work, takes a lot of, you know, enthusiasm and gutting it out. And the CEO of Infinite, Michael Follin, is the dude who's going to be on today. And he's going to talk about all kinds of basic nutrition stuff and why Infinite was created and his perspectives on why we should get back to racing and how health should be the focus and we're missing out on some opportunities. So it's a really cool episode, some touching controversial points. Jack, you got anything to egg our listeners on to keep listening?
Oh yeah. We go right into the politics in this one. So be ready for that.
Perfect. Well, let's hit it, and let's check out CEO of Infinite Nutrition, Michael Follin, and then we will hit a follow-up afterwards. All right, so joining me today, we have Michael Follin, CEO of Infinite Nutrition. Now, this is a company I've been using for, I don't know, five to six, maybe even 7 years since I've been on the triathlon scene. Certainly as a pro athlete, it's changed my whole fueling program. Now there's tons of other fueling options out there, but we're not going to really focus on only Infinite Nutrition today. We want to talk about the sport, how nutrition companies are evolving during this crisis that we're all going through. And most importantly, I want to give Michael an opportunity to really give his story and why he's so behind liquid fuel. And I am too. So Michael, thanks for coming on board. And if you wouldn't mind, just dive right in. Just what brings this awesome company to the forefront of our table right now?
Thank you, number one. And I appreciate you having me on. I started kind of like you. I started doing triathlon, you know, late 80s. Muncie was still an Ironman qualifier. You know, Mrs. T's was a qualifier. It was a totally different triathlon scene back then, right? And so I started like everybody else. I was a banker. I was a reformed smoker. So that's where triathlon really, I was a two-pack a day guy. And then saw Alcatraz on TV and I'm like, well, hell, that looks compulsive obsessive. I think I'm going to do that one. So I bought an Italian bike. I had no idea what I was doing. And then just kind of started from there. My very first race was a Muncie half Ironman. So, you know, I just jumped in with both feet and, you know, 20 years later, 10 Ironman under my belt, did, you know, Hawaii a couple of times. What you kind of go through is that you realize out there that fueling is half the game. I mean, we're all physically fit, and then a lot of it's just how much the good Lord sprinkled you with pink pixie dust as far as, you know, your VO2 max. I mean, there's certain restrictions that we all have. So the big one is nutrition. And I knew my first race, it was Ironman Canada up in Penticton. I trained good for it and had the perfect nutrition day, ran a 3:18 marathon, felt great. I'm like, well, this is no problem. This triathlon thing's easy, right? And for the next 9 races, I chased it. I never was able to recreate it. And the problem is nutrition, is that if you don't nutritionally have a day that is consistent, I'm not talking about perfect. I'm just talking about consistency, you know, where you don't have that period of time after you've eaten a Clif Bar that you're still chewing 20 minutes later. And you get that bloaty kind of like, and then you need to get through that. And sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. The liquid thing just keeps your day consistent. And, you know, when we came up with the original idea, it was not my idea, it was somebody else's. He said, hey, I got an idea, fully custom nutrition, all-in-one isotonic, and he was a science guy, and that isotonic thing really makes a huge difference in the simplicity of the day. You just don't have to worry about cutting it with water. You just drink your stuff and ride your bike. Done. And that, if you offer anybody that, you know, what would you rather do? Would you rather go out for a, you know, 2 or 5 hour ride with a pocket full of crap and you got, you know, water bottles and drinks, and you got to manage all this stuff? Or would you just rather have something in your bottle that you just drink and enjoy your bike ride? It's a no-brainer. So that's kind of where we come down. It's that it's not magic. It's calories are calories. I don't care if it's coming from a gel or a bar or gummies or whatever it is. Calories are calories. The best way to do this is isotonic through liquids, because you can gauge everything and know that you're not going to have any stomach issues whatsoever. And then we're the only company that utilizes protein. That's the other key thing, is that there's some really good companies. Scratch is a good company. Tailwind's a smaller company that's made really good inroads in the ultra community. But none of those guys provide protein. And we allow, and some of our formulas have very, very small amounts, not like the old Accelerate, which made me super bloaty, but like a 12-to-14-to-1 ratio. And that protein, you never get hungry. So, you know, I worked with the Garmin team for years on the tours, and Milner came up to me and said, hey, do you guys have an appetite suppressant? I'm like, no, that's just protein. And all my pros understand that you can go for a 6 to 8 to a 12 or a 24 hour ride and really not need anything else. And that could be on a trail walk or a run, or if you're climbing, think about the weight savings, camping. There's all kinds of ways that you can utilize what we do, but we're just kind of the company for idiots. I mean, and we like it that way. It's like, we're brainless.
I love that. Especially your candor on the idiots part, because I think the bottom line is we as athletes complicate the hell out of something that might be working really well. And I've seen it throughout the pro field as well, where guys are be going strong for a few years and then they totally change their diet, or they limit calories during races, and all of a sudden they're just total shit for a couple of months or maybe even half a year until they get back to what works. So when, you know, I'm a coach as well, and we've got, you know, 300 athletes around the world. And mostly what the problem is people are just mixing and matching too many brands and they're complicating it. So the fact that you're just a big proponent of simplification that's really all you need. Now, quick question on protein. I personally haven't
We can all calculate that, okay, I'm on 6:15 or 6:30 pace, and I know that my projected time is a 3:10 or 3:05 or whatever it is. Try doing math 2 hours into a marathon. You can't do it. I mean, you're mentally, you're not really capable of doing advanced calculations during an event. And so that's the thing that leads to so many problems, that people are trying to do a science experiment out there, and it doesn't work.
Yeah, you'll be throwing a dart at a board, and all of a sudden you could probably overeat by 10 to 15 calories and just be totally screwed for a good 30 minutes while your body struggles to process it. And I had a good revelation with that on a 150-mile bike race I just did last weekend, where at one of the aid stations at mile 80, they had these delicious-looking cookies out there, and I'd just been on my infinite bottles since. So I ate a cookie at mile 80, and from mile 80 to mile 90, I just felt all the blood leave my legs and just totally get rerouted to my stomach to digest this cookie. So that was another reminder of, you know, even though it's a bike race, I wasn't running off of it. So I allowed for some more solid food. I mean, keeping it simple is the way to do. But back to a quick question real fast on protein. How low do you recommend going on the protein? Because I've seen some drinks on the custom mixes that my athletes build a little bit high, and then they get a little sloshy stomach towards the first parts of their run. So how low would you like to see that in order to prevent sloshing, or have you heard anything about it?
I would like to have it as low as that. So we use it as an ergonomic. I don't believe, and I've not seen real good research out there that shows that protein really serves a purpose during exercise, meaning it doesn't help you recover post that I've seen. It is an alternative calorie source for your body, which typically helps your body be more efficient, meaning that the more types of fuel sources that you're running, the reason why Infinite was created using multiple carbs. So we use a combination of a long chain glucose polymer, which is an endurance type of carb. That's the one most people are starting to use now. We use glucose, sucrose, and then in some cases we use a crystalline fructose. So we're actually putting multiple carbs. Anytime anybody's looking at a product, make sure that there's multiple calorie carbohydrate sources in the product, because the more types, the more efficient your body is at absorbing them. Singular carb sources, your max absorption rates are typically about 0.9 grams per kilo of body weight. And so for a typical 175-pound guy, that limits you to about 240-ish calories an hour, max. You can shove more in there, but you won't absorb it, because there's math involved with this. When you blend carbs, adding glucose, sucrose, and that long-chain glucose polymers together, those numbers go from 0.9 to 1.24 grams per hour. So that's increasing your caloric absorption rates by about 30%. That's a huge variant. And so with our system, where you're using multiple carbs to max out calories, the addition of protein is an additional calorie source. So that probably should help your body be the most efficient you could be. And remember, while you're doing this, you're doing it under stress. You're dehydrated typically. Your core body temperature is elevated. You don't feel particularly well. You're nauseated a lot of times. And what your body needs is something that it doesn't have to process. It's pretty much like an oral IV, if you want to think of it that way. And if we can do all that in one spot, as far as the protein goes, I would just, at 2 to 3 grams for ultra people is a really good place. I find I can tolerate more protein on a bike. So I may be in the 4 gram range on a bicycle formula, and on the running, I'd probably at 2. Anytime you introduce protein, it will foam a little bit. That's just the properties of any protein that you're using, because it changes the surface tension of water. So what I do is I'll make it the night before and then fill my bottles in the morning, and just having it sit for 12 hours in the fridge, you pretty much eliminate any kind of foaming, so you can fill up whatever, you know, your orange mud pack or your fuel belt or whatever you're using with the stuff that's been sitting in the fridge for 8 or 12 hours. And it doesn't foam that much at that point, for whatever reason.
That's great advice. I think I'll have to try that too. Another counterpart to protein, keep getting a little bit more simple. I've noticed we have a couple of guys I work with. We have a amino, just pure amino sponsor. And we've noticed that just aminos by themselves, just the essentials, the 8 or 9 essentials that are, we take them before and after sessions. I know you all have an additive you can put in with your custom blends. Have you seen some good results with aminos? Because we can basically start to repair, you know, all the hypertrophy we're putting our bodies through during the system that we're racing. Have you seen any benefits there?
Yeah. I'm not sure. I've not honestly seen the data that supports that. I'm not saying it doesn't. All the proteins that we're using a full amino profile, so that we're using a whey isolate. It's an Irish cold press that's just delicious. It's so good. We've got an egg protein. We've got a vegan, which is, you know, I will tell you that, and I'm not a vegan anywhere close, and I can't tolerate virtually any vegan proteins because I just think they taste like old sweat socks. We have our vegan protein option is really good. It's a brown rice and fava. And again, that has a complete amino profile as well. So I don't think it could hurt you. I wouldn't put too many aminos in it just because it can make it taste a little funny. It kind of
gets a little bloaty too.
Yeah. It's just, I think less is more. I mean, I 90% of the problems I see people doing are from doing too much as opposed to too little. It's typical triathletes is that, or ultra people, you know, if one's good, that means three has to be better. that's not the way it works with nutrition.
That's true. And personally, I got to applaud you for jumping onto the cold brew in the mud. Those products have been some of the staple additives to my life that really kept me super grounded with Infinite over the years. I just love that you embrace that. Triathletes and endurance folks, we just love coffee. And I think cold brew is one of the smoothest protein coffee mixes that I've ever had. And it tastes amazing. So what was the thought process behind getting all the coffee into the mixes?
The mud line's been around for a long time. So that was, again, we identify needs and fill them. So the need is, and this is typical of any of us that are out doing significant amount of trainings, is there's mornings that you just don't have time to eat. So you may be going doing a 3.5 hour run. And so what do you do? So that's where mud came into place, is that you could, you know, get something that's coffee forward, has a little bit of caffeine to it, you know, protein to keep your belly happy, and then put that into a rice milk or coconut or almond or whatever you like, pound that down and just go head out the door. And you could use it as a recovery drink, healthy snack at the office. It's just kind of one of those, you know, there's only about 6 ingredients on the nutrition label. It's a super simple product, but you know, it's just really solid. And then we started with the mocha, and then we've got, you know, all the variants now that we've got coconut. You know, an Irish cream for St. Patrick's Day. We do the coconut for the summer, which is so good.
Yeah.
So that line has kind of evolved out. Cold brew was something that was developed up by Canada. And we have licensees that operate, you know, as Infinite licensees in Canada, Australia. And we're hopefully by January going to be in Europe, which that is not announced. So this will be the first time I've actually said that. Is that hopefully we'll be in Europe in next year, which we'll be operating out of the Czech Republic. And then they're right next door to Germany, which is probably, it's just a fabulous market. So that's where we're hoping to go. And then South Africa is a possibility as well. So we've got a whole bunch of, you know, people out there kind of doing different things. Canada came up with the cold brew concept, and it's just simple. It's, again, it's very coffee forward. I'm an espresso guy myself. So it's 20 grams of protein, 100 milligrams of caffeine, and less than 10 grams of sugar. And so the protein sort of acts like a creamer. It's really good.
No doubt.
It's delicious.
Yeah, if I mix that so in a trail bottle, it's just, it goes real fast. I kind of go through it before I should because it's so tasty.
Yeah, and that's honestly the, with all the situation that we're all dealing with right now, that definitely is the direction of our industry, which is probably the more protein oriented products.
Yeah, and speaking of which, how is a nutrition endurance driven company such as Infinite, how are you all handling the COVID crisis that we're dealing with, and how are you evolving during the business patterns that you're all seeing, the ebbs and flows? How's that going?
It's crazy, dude. It's absolutely nuts. It's it's like walking through a minefield most days. We've got a team of over 500 people that are, that's just my team, my Infinite team, just my amateurs, not including, my pro guys. We've got groups of folks out there that just are like, what the hell just happened? And trying to, number one, maintain positivity, provide content to our folks out there that's going to try and help them, during all the craziness that's gone on. It's been a challenge. And our biggest thing that we feel like we can bring forward is a sense of positivity. But at the same time, I also think that we as athletes, we choose tough sports. We don't back down from things that may be a challenge. I God knows I ride my mountain bike downhill way faster than I should sometimes.
Yeah.
And that's dangerous. But I choose to do that because that's the sport I love. And that's the hard part. I'm having a hard part right now is that we as healthy people, we're not the group. And so our lifestyle is really under attack. And I feel like that, we all need to do our part, blah, blah, blah. But man, oh man, it's difficult. So, we try and be positive. We try and, try and keep our people strong because I believe we are strong as a group. And, and then we've got to really change because what we've lost this year is all the fuel that people use at races. And, I've got about 100,000 folks out there that fuel their races. So that's gone, dead.
Yeah.
So then what do you do? And so we're pushing in all kinds of different directions. We're heavily going into the health wellness part where, because we're really good at fueling people that feel like shit, that are just nauseated, dehydrated, don't want to eat, don't feel good. That is the description of what anybody that's going through chemo is, or has IBS, IBD, or a lot of the maladies that people experience on a day-to-day basis. They don't feel well, they're nauseated, they're got a temperature, they just don't feel good. So we're heavy moving towards fueling people that are not feeling well. And that's the direction that we're heavily moving into right now. That's a much bigger market. And the competition is a lot stronger, but that's really where we're heading, to tell you the truth.
That's a pretty common trend I'm noticing among just the sponsors that I work with, that they are finding ways to branch into new markets or expand their reach. And applause to you all for jumping into that market has to be saturated and super competitive. However, I think Infinite has a great name, a great following, and honestly, you guys stand for the simplicity of what just keeps people moving in a healthy manner. And you made a great point that I wanted to touch on. We are, as athletes and endurance athletes specifically, we're in a different category of society in some aspects as far as health, wellness, being outdoors, always being maybe one step ahead. Consciously of taking care of ourselves. So you're right. We've been negatively impacted by this, and the people who've been maybe slacking for years and years, or they're sadly paying the price. However, we can't race because of it. So, it sucks, but we are still trying to think of everyone else, of course. But what do you think about?
Yeah, here's the other.
Yeah, go ahead.
We have leadership right now that have just missed a significant opportunity. Our 50% of our country is overweight, 38% is morbidly obese. And that's not dogging people, I'm just saying. And so, you know, what do people say? Stay home, eat your Fritos.
Yeah.
I'm like, people, we have a pretty good way of making sure that you're not going to get sick. And it's called being healthy. It's being outside. So we've lost an opportunity. We've had 3 months of shutdown. It should have been known. Don't hide in your basement. Eat your Fritos. Think about this. You go to the grocery store. What's sold out? Cereal, junk food, ice cream, all that crap, right? Tons of fruits and vegetables available. Not much meat, but tons of fruits and vegetables available. And what our leadership could have said is, hey, this is an opportunity for everybody to drop some weight. Everybody needs to get healthy here and go out and exercise, go out and eat right. But no, we've missed it. We've just missed it. And this was a great opportunity to start helping America. So me, as an athlete, I'm saying, okay, I want to be a leader here. I don't want to be one of those people that are going to sit on my couch and hide. I want to be the person out there saying, look, what we need to do is lead by example and show people that this is the way to go, that we're healthy. We're relatively immune to this kind of stuff because we've got low BMI. Our hearts are in good shape. Our lungs are in good shape. That is what I mean by leadership is not, I always wear a mask. I'm completely conforming with what people tell me to do. But when it comes to me, you know, I think we can lead by example. And that doesn't mean being obnoxious or shaming anybody. It's just like, hey, that's what we do. We're triathletes. Let us be. I mean, the state of Ohio right now, all their beaches are open. They have no social distancing on state beaches. They're getting 2,500 people a day on those beaches. So if the state of Ohio can do it, why can't 500 healthy triathletes? I'm just sort of at a loss right now. And I think we're a strong group, and I think we can show people that there's alternatives to what that sedentary lifestyle will bring and get people healthy again. And that's what I hope will happen, but I'm just not seeing a lot of it.
Yeah. I haven't even really seen some of the progressive countries really stand behind that as like a, you know, a banner, like let's get out and be healthy and beat this thing because we are healthy, not just because we're trying to get herd immunity or wait for this damn vaccine to come around in a couple of years. So yeah, that's the best and utmost important thing everyone should be doing is like, instead of keeping their grandparents sequestered away out of, you know, everyone's line of sight, you know, go on some small walks and try to get people a little bit out in that fresh air in the safe environment. And I can tell you, just being out here in Utah, man, we are just getting hammered by the Californians who've been locked down and their state can't go out to parks. Nothing's really open. So they're flocking to other states like here. And they are getting out, luckily. So that's been nice to see. It's been terrible to see all the traffic on my mountain roads. But honestly, like, as long as people are getting out and taking care of the environment, it's all good. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty interesting. I think there's going to be a lot of studies and books written about this period right now, since it's like totally unknown craziness that we're all going through. But the problem is, it's like we're acting like there's no way out of it when they're, like you just said, like, just take care of yourself in a better manner. And like, we just increase the health of everybody, then we're going to beat this thing probably on our own. And we're not going to have to really worry about the death rate anymore, or the how many cases are skyrocketing in Florida overnight. Like, it's just, the news is, I feel like, perpetuating so much negativity. So thank you guys at Infinite for being super positive too. I mean, even all the newsletters and all the emails I see that come out they're super, you know, get outdoors and enjoy yourself. So that's been awesome.
There's a lot to be positive about. I mean, we're lucky that I'm not a restaurant. I'm an entrepreneur through and through, have been for 15 years. I started this company, me, myself, and I answered all the phone calls. I made all the product. I called, I did all everything. Me, I was working in another job And I've built, you know, my group has built this thing over 15 years. Mm-hmm. And the devastation, if somebody's got a small boutique that they've built over 15 years and they're losing it, the devastation, I feel it. I feel it every day, and I'm able to continue business. I cannot fathom what it would be to have somebody put your heart and soul into something. And, you know, I've got race directors, you know what it's like, man. These are my friends. These are my friends and people in the business that we've known. I've been on the Ironman, expo circuit for 15 years. I know all these people. The coaches are devastated right now because nobody's racing. This is brutal. And it doesn't happen. I mean, I just want to be positive and I want to do that. But I think if we can be leaders out there and show that positive side of things, it's going to make us feel better. But hopefully we can lead people out of this just bad place that we're going. I think we've got a lot of positive things that we do. I mean, there's nothing better than getting outside.
Yeah. Speaking of that, do you all in Ohio have any local events? I mean, obviously Ironman is under intense scrutiny for local governments, even to be able to handle 1,000 to 1,200 person race. So do you see any small events popping up that are getting a little bit more notoriety since nothing else is happening?
Yeah, it's been really negative notoriety, though. There was a bike race down in Lawrenceburg, Kentucky, I think, which is just on the other side of the river. Mm-hmm. And it went off without a hitch. Every race was filled. They did that, but they got a whole bunch of pushback from not the racing community, from the outside community, that kind of thing. So that's the thing, that it's the outside pushback from people outside of our community. It's just tough to hear, like, you know, a mayor of a major city talking about, people, this is not the time to be training for endurance and running a 5K. I'm like, okay, wait, you don't get it, what we do. No 5K? Kidding. Who runs a 5K?
Yeah. Like, I'm not going to wake up early for a 5K anymore. Come on.
No. And it's like, no, I'm going to go run for 3 hours or five or whatever you crazy people do.
So
it's funny, but it's all good.
So things are starting to happen, though, I think. And I think if we can get to September and maybe have like one big name race happen actually and not get canceled 2-3 days before. So I live in St. George. I think the local government there is a little more open-minded as far as holding these events, especially seeing some, you know, I'm doing a trail race this weekend and I've done a couple bike races so far and things haven't really been too shamey. So I'm hoping some of the West Coast vibes might propagate east on the East Coast on that one, but who knows, man? I feel like it's like a lag. Like the East Coast seems to be sometimes like 8 to 10 months behind what the West Coast is maybe doing. So I hope it gets over there.
If I had to guess, I think the Midwest is going to lead the charge, and maybe the Southeast. I think what's going to happen is, I know I talked to my Australian guy, they're going to be racing in Australia, that they, different districts will be open, but the ones that are open, I think they're going to be definitely running races. So what's going to happen, hopefully, knock on wood, hope the tour goes out without a hitch, right?
Oh, yeah.
I want to see a ton of, you know, a bunch of people screaming for a bunch of skinny guys riding up a mountain. We'll get some European football going. The Australians will start racing. And then we're going to see, okay, this is possible to do. And once that happens, that would be great. The other part is, I did see legislation start to come out of Washington where there's going to be some liability and tort reform. That's the biggest problem, is that if they can actually do something saying that these race directors are not going to get sued by somebody that catches the bug at an event,
yeah,
then I think things will loosen up. And that's what I'm hearing is happening with the new legislation that may come out. So that would be a very positive thing. I hope it would be, you know, I've got some really good friends. If they can, you know, Triple T is one of those races that,
oh yeah,
you know, that thing's got to go. Come on.
I hope so. Yeah, my heart was breaking when I keep seeing Leadville get canceled and all the, even,
whenever some of the big European races were canceled like 8 months before they were supposed to happen. But I do think it was smart for them to not have two Konas in 1 year next year. That was going to get out of hand.
Yeah, I mean, Kona, when they canceled Kona, that one was tough. That was like, oh God. But yeah, I mean, this will come back. It's all cyclical. The thing is that all these viruses, it's not a forever situation. They all go away. So it'll happen. It's just right now, everybody just needs to take a deep breath, try and enjoy the day, you know, enjoy getting up in the morning. This year will eventually get over, but it can't get, December 31st cannot get here soon enough.
Yeah, I think we've all probably been in the trenches long enough. But I think that I just wrote a blog even for a company, and I was just ruminating on the past year that we've gone through so far. And there's so many positives to still take away. Like, even as a pro athlete, we just spend our whole year just killing ourselves, traveling from race to race and losing fitness and gaining a little bit back. Like, this has been the first year for probably most pros where we can really focus on staying healthy the whole year, not getting injury, not overdoing it. And I don't know, some are probably doing some 50-hour weeks, it seems like, but others are just like, we're just able to enjoy training more. So for me, I would never be able to do an ultra marathon or these crazy fun bike races because I've got such a strict racing schedule. So the pros there, like, I've just been loving the process of getting training again on my own or with even a couple people. So there are a lot of positives that are going to come out of this, I think, especially companies who are evolving like yours and getting into new markets. So I have a question real fast.
Yeah, it's a great point. I mean, there's a big difference between just going out for a bike ride and training. And it's wonderful if you can turn that training mode off for a while and just go ride your bike. Don't care where your heart rate is. Enjoy the leaves on the trees, you know? And it took me years to get away from that. But now when I go ride for a bike, I'm like, I don't know how far I'm going. I don't know how hard I'm going. I'm just going to go ride my bike. I don't care, you know? And that's a really nice mentality to get away from that. I got to go pound out 100 and I want to that, you know? It's really nice if you can make that transition.
And how nice was it when Garmin was down for 5 days when it didn't matter what you did? You couldn't track it anyways. Real quick, as far as getting involved with a bigger company as a nutrition sponsor, I've always wondered, you know, what the benefit is or the cost. Have you ever entertained partnering with Ironman or seen the cost associated with that or the cost benefit growth concepts? What's that look like?
I think the dollar amount was a lot.
Yeah.
Ironman is a worldwide brand and we're not yet. So the power bars of the world and the Gatorade of the world are going to be much more a better fit for the MDOT folks. And rightly so. I mean, they can bring product all over the world. They can give worldwide logistical support. They've got, you know, huge truckloads full of branding that they can go anywhere in Europe that they bring down from the tour or whatever. It's a different thing. So, I mean, Ironman is I'm incredibly thankful to Ironman. They by far are the reason why Infinite's where it is because of the growth of Ironman. When I started racing, it was Hawaii and Penticton.
Yeah.
That was it. Those are the only two Ironmans in North America. And think about where we are now. And that's helped everybody from the coaches to the wetsuit people to the nutrition folks. So they've really built, you know, the sport. Obviously there's the downside that they are the sport and, you know, there's always an issue in business that you talk about concentrations and triathlon as a sport has a concentration issue with Ironman is that everything's wrapped up with them. And so it's a bit precarious if their health isn't good, it's precarious for the sport. So you can't really deny what that company has done for everybody involved. It's a pretty amazing story.
Yeah, no doubt. It's been, the only trouble I see is they just don't reinvest into the sport as much. And we're talking with the CEO of the PTO over the last, I think, month or so, that's really the only big thing I would love to see the sport get more of, is just a better, more of a grassroots growth program that, you know, you want to feed your young, because eventually all the old hats are going to be done. And then, you know, what have we done to really double and triple the size of the sport? And, you know, there's no youth programs or Ironman sponsored, really. I mean, there's the foundation, which is great. And there are some Tri-Kids things that are going on, but I really would love to see some of the billions of earnings, you know, maybe $1 billion back into the sport somehow. Obviously it's easier said than done, but that's just, you know, my small perspective. But good to know that it's very expensive to get involved with them. But I was always wondering if the cost benefit would be there. Like, I think Newton Shoes probably went, or K-Swiss, those companies seem like they didn't last after a partnership with Ironman.
Yeah, but I don't think that was Ironman's fault. I wouldn't. That's that, as a business guy, it's just, you know, I think I just, as on a business side, I run this company to avoid the headshot. Okay. That's what I do. I mean, and you just got to be careful of the headshot. And doing, like, think about, there's an old company called G-Push. Do you remember them?
No, I've never heard of them.
Okay, G-Push was a company that used a mushroom carbohydrate. Pretty cool concept, actually. Low osmotic carbohydrate. It was pretty cool. And they, I think, was it the LA Triathlon or one of the big ones they jumped into, spent like $250,000 and didn't get the return. So you just have to be judicious with who you sponsor. And we sponsor races that have a story to them. That's why I love Triple T, because it's a unique, cool thing. There's Six Gap and down in the
Georgia,
down around Atlanta, which is this epic bike ride, killer roads, just hard. Love that kind of stuff. We like things that have a story to them or that are just freaking hard. That's what we like. And that's the kind of event typically that we're supporting. That's why, you know, the Triple T events here in Ohio, we're really lucky to have as many races, because we've got a couple of race directors that do a great job putting on a ton of races pretty much every weekend.
So would you get behind, this is an idea I had maybe like a couple weeks ago, because I haven't seen anything like it yet, but since, like most triathletes right now, I've gotten the gravel bug, so I've been riding my gravel bike like a madman. And there's, I'm actually up in the Tusher Mountains right now, where gravel biking originated. So there's a race course called the Crusher and the Tusher, and it's where they first started doing gravel racing on these roads up here. And I was thinking, why don't we build, because there's reservoirs everywhere, you know, why don't we build a really tough, gritty, gravel focused triathlon one day? Like, I think I'm gonna do it. So I hope that, because I haven't seen anyone else do it. Have you?
Nope. There used to be a triathlon that was in Cincinnati called the Outlaw. And what they would do would, they'd pick like 20, 25 of us, which was really fun. And then put you in an RV with all the curtains closed, and you put your trucks and your bike in the back of a pickup truck and they'd bring everything out. And you'd have no idea where you are. And they'd like throw you near this farm pond and tell you to go swimming around. And they'd tell you, okay, you got to go to this place. And you don't have phones or anything like that. So you're trying to flag down farmers out in the middle of the road. Like, hey, where the hell are we? So maybe what you could do is have like an outlaw triathlon out there. Just do it. Show up. Low key. No nothing. Just have a out. You got to go here. Bye.
Yeah. You. Like, hey, here's where swimming, we're going to probably start at this time. And then you're going to take your bike and meet at this point. However you get there, you'll have a gravel bike. So there's like three ways. And then we're going to run up this crazy mountaintop. I think that I'm going to do something like that.
All right. Exactly. Yeah. And just, that would be really fun. I think it's great. I mean, I want to preface anybody that gets irritated. Everybody understands there are at-risk people, and we have to keep those at-risk people safe. As healthy people that are not, we have that responsibility. But to go out and do that on a day, that would be super fun. And if it happens, I'd be more than happy to send some infinite out in your direction.
Yeah, you all are really good about always giving me huge bags for camps and everything, so no doubt I would count on you for that.
Nice.
And you're right. I think, you know, if you are at risk, then let's try to help you not be at risk, obviously. I mean, the whole mask, anti-mask movement, like, I'm glad to hear that, you know, you're on board with at least wearing it, whether we believe it's going to help or not. At least it shows that we're all in it together and we're all at least for the cause of positivity and moving forward. So very good on you for being like that. But yeah, thanks for hopping on the show. I think this was way more in depth and learning about some of the stuff you've been through in life. Awesome that you've been worked with pro tour cyclists and you've brought so much of your knowledge and background into this awesome business, which is, you know, going extremely global. So huge congrats, Sarah. I'm so happy to be part of the team to help growth. And I've just, it's crazy. Just, I bring on athletes, you know, every few months that are new, and some of them are new, some have been doing it for a while. And, you know, the last thing I'll say is they get on Infinite, they make a custom blend and they're like, I never knew I could feel this good after 5 hours of riding. So thank you for making it simple for us.
No, dude, I love that. And it's true. I mean, I have had somebody come in the other day and he's like, he was from Europe. He's like, your stuff's the real deal. It's like, it's, I'll take the Pepsi challenge against anybody out there. It stuff's legit, but thank you. And it's been very enjoyable as well. I, you know, let's maybe do this. Let's put something on the calendar next spring. And then we can talk about what a fabulous year it's going to be turning out to be. And we can all, you know, have a very positive on outlook. Let's revisit this thing next spring. How's that sound?
That sounds great. And until then, we'll just keep pumping out and keep drinking fuel and having some adventures and, you know, keeping healthy. So that's the goal.
There you go.
All right, brother. Thanks for your time. And we'll catch up with you in the next 6 months.
Thanks, Nick.
Wow. What a great interview we have with the CEO of Infinite. Nick, thanks so much for doing that interview. I was out doing race prep for my race tomorrow, which is actually yesterday when this airs, but really cool interview. And I like the direction it went. It went into a little bit of, you know, something everybody's thinking about, which is when the hell are we going to be able to race? And didn't really answer any questions, obviously, but we know that he thinks we need to be out there racing, and he had some good points. I mean, it's true that if you're, you know, going to a beach with 2,000 people and that's fine, why can't we be doing a triathlon? Like, it's kind of an interesting perspective. What do you think about that, Nick?
I think that made sense to me in a lot of ways. However, like, there's no way anybody, any local government can get behind it. It's just everyone, they would get crucified if they were like, okay, we're going to allow 1,000 people to get together and race, even though they're all healthy. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that the population who is not within triathlon understands, like, this, it's a culture, it's a lifestyle, and generally we might be a little healthier than the rest of the population. Not that we're not susceptible and abnormalities can't happen, but am I off on that? That just, it sounds good, but I'll be damned if local governments get behind it.
Yeah, it's tough because, man, it's just, for one thing, there's a big difference between, you know, your local triathlon with 200 people and running an Ironman with 2,500 people driving in from all parts of the country or other countries and stuff, right? So I think, you know, for a small race where people aren't traveling and stuff, I could see it being accepted by the community if it's like, all right, look, this is what we're doing. We've only got up to 500 people. These are the measures that are in place. Like, this is going to be smaller than, you know, the number of people that congregate at a beach, for example. That could be fine. But for something like an Ironman right now, just especially with, you know, the case numbers still being high in the States, like, that's what people's minds go to, right? It's, oh my gosh, there's still a lot of COVID around. And even though that's not necessarily the statistics that are going to determine, you know, how many people are getting sick or how many people are having serious illnesses or what have you, that's the number that always gets put out by the media, and that's what's freaking people out. So I agree with you. It's just, it's tough. I don't think we're going to see any bigger triathlons for a while, at least a couple months in the States. They just canceled Ironman 70.3 Coeur d'Alene, which was set to go, I think, September 12th or something like that.
September 6th.
Oh, man. It's not looking good. Oh, they canceled the Eagle Man too?
Yeah. And that's, I think
it's going to happen. I think we're going to be racing again in a few months, but I think it's going to be very progressive. I don't think we're going to go straight back to, all right, we're having Ironman events. It's going to be like what we're seeing right now, what you're doing, what provinces in Canada and small governments in the United States are doing. We're going to put on small events where there's maybe less than 100 people, maybe 200. And then, you know, that's probably the leash limit right now. It's like, we got to build this thing from the ground up again. However, dude, I am pretty sure Mexico is going to be like free for all. So whenever Mexico races happen, I'm banking on those right now. Whether can travel.
When's the next one scheduled for? Like, I
end of September is 70.3 Cozumel.
Okay, cool. Well, I'll start looking at it because it's like, the other thing is if Ironman's got to get some transparency with what they mean in terms of, oh, here's what our prize money is going to be. It's because they kind of told us like, oh, you know, we'll base it on how many people go, and it's kind of a little, and you know, we'll pay deeper just because we know everybody's having hard times and stuff. It's like, okay, give me some numbers, you know, X number of people participate in the pro race. This is the prize purse. This is the breakdown. Like, people need to know. We can't just go to a race not knowing what the hell's going on. Like, if they're going to say, oh yeah, it's 50 people, there's going to be $150K purse, then that's a big, big incentive. Whereas if I don't really know and I show up and they say it's a $20K purse, well, frig, I'm not wasting my time racing 80 other pros for $20K.
Yeah, I think that the fields are going to be pretty deep, and it would be nice if they at least made a mandatory 10 deep pay scale, and that was, you know, pretty graded, even if it was every race was like a 50 to 75K purse. That would be pretty solid. That way, at least 10th place is still getting like, you know, $500 and can maybe help offset flight costs. But remember how they were allocating slots for worlds back way back before we went, when they had points where we wouldn't even know race morning because it was only based on who showed up, how many slots were going to be given out for worlds. Like, remember that last year, or maybe it was 2 years ago?
Yeah.
I remember Paul and Newby Frazier would be walking around in the race in the morning, and like right before we jump in the water to warm up, they'd be like, okay, everyone's here, we've got this many slots. I wonder if they're gonna do that with prize money. They're gonna be like, okay, Everyone showed up, we've got this many allocated spots for money now. I think that might happen for the first few races.
Yeah, I could see that. And it's just, that's tough. Like, it's a big leap. And it's also, do you want to go to a race and have the risk 2 days out of them canceling the friggin' race? Like,
yeah, that's the tough one.
It's a tough equation, man. Like, I do think that in Mexico, if they say there's going to be a race, they're going to put the damn race on. That's what they did with Campeche.
Yeah.
I guarantee you they were getting pressure to shut that race down, and they didn't.
Yeah.
So that being said, when you're in the States or Canada or whatnot, like,
states are,
they're
tough.
Just gonna, yeah, it's tough because the governor can just come in and say no, right? So
yeah, like, well, we had a surge of 1,000 cases overnight, everyone's done, no one. But I mean, I don't know, hopefully there's some measures taken to cut down these hot spots. But either way, let's end on a final point that I want to get your opinion on, because you weren't there during the episode. What if I created some cool, like, so I mentioned during the episode, I live right near the foundation of where gravel riding started in the US. Like, what if I turned that iconic course into some sort of a triathlon? Because there's two reservoirs on each side of the range and there's tons of running trails. Like, what if I made a gravel road triathlon just, and it turned into like Kona one day? Wouldn't that be sweet?
Do it. Yeah, I heard that part. I heard that part and I was like, dude, this is a sick idea. The gravel's a new thing. You could test it out with like a small number of people. Like,
yeah.
I don't know what the rules are with gatherings in Utah, but you could probably get a few dozen people out and just be like, hey, this is the course. You know, we're going to have 5 volunteers with hand timers or something like that, and just do it, see if people like it, and grow it from there. Like, that's what we're doing with this race. Like, literally, it's hand-timed. Like, we've got volunteers. Like, that's how racing started, and this is what it's all about. And, like, people are getting back to that. And I think, like, on the pro side of things, sponsors need to kind of adjust to the times and realize, hey, there is still things pros can do and bring value and do these, you know, like, stunts, or I guess call it stunts, but like little mini races, and people still want to watch sports. So like, if you do a little mini race locally and you, and there was a good video production of it, then, and it gets kind of word around locally, that's still good exposure for the sponsors. And they kind of need to think, okay, well, we're not paying our athletes to do Ironmans, but what can they do?
Yeah.
And that's how the pros can kind of get by for now. So like, if you can put something together like that, you can be like, hey, look, I got, you know, you just name, just get in touch with some pros that are able to drive there and be like, hey, I can get you guys out to this. We can get a sponsor together and like make it happen. Like, I bet you could get some pretty sick pros. Like, how many pros live in driving distance to you? Probably quite a few.
I already told Justin Metzler and Robbie Decker, because I know those guys are hitting the gravel, or I think Justin's getting ready to. There's tons out in Boulder. There's tons of good riding there. We could maybe even do it in Boulder. I'm scouting it out, man. I think I'm going to make this thing happen, even if it's just like five of us, just to get a cool course. I just got to figure out like how hard I want to make it, because there's potential to make it like Norseman level hard. And there's also potential to make it pretty moderate. So that's really where I have to land. Yeah. We've got endless gravel roads, tons of reservoirs we can swim in, and then tons of running. So I think Utah might be the place for that, but I'm going to get you guys down to do this thing once I've created it, and we'll see how hard it is. We'll see if Benton will give you a free bike to just rip on it.
Oh man, I'm sure I have one I could at least ride, but darn, I could right. Just, I also have my NS1. I'm going to throw some cross tires. Freaking Nathan Killam posted this awesome like video of the tires he put on that bike. They're like super knobby. It turns it into a straight cross bike. It's freaking what awesome.
How like 28 mil width, or how wide are they?
31s.
You can hold 31s on that? That's great, man. That's just enough for a cross.
I have 32s on my road bike right now, road slicks, and they clear easily. I bet you could get a 32 cross tire on there, no problem. That's as long sweet. As you're not riding through like crazy caked up mud and stuff.
Well, sweet. Well, hey, we've got some stuff that we're going to probably elaborate on in the next couple weeks, because August right now is freaking wide open. So I'm trying to plan something to go to Boulder or just do something here. And then maybe we'll race in September. I don't know. But next episode, we're going to catch up on my 100K, Garrick's trip, your race, and hopefully have, I don't know, I don't even want to drop the next guest, because anything could happen. But if we have our next guest on and we know who it's going to be awesome. So hopefully Jack can keep that going and not get the times messed up like he did that one time.
That one time, like 3 months ago. Hey, we've got a soft commitment from Andrew Starkowicz for next week.
Yeah, I wasn't going to name drop him yet, but okay, fine. Soft commitment. Let's keep it soft.
No, you name drop, because now people are, yeah, I mean, he may back out. Like, we've also said we're going to have Lucy Charles on, and that's never happened, so people aren't too upset about us.
All right, well, this was a great episode. I'm glad we were able to shed some light on a nutrition company that's, you know, evolving through the mess of this stuff, and how we're still racing a little bit and we're having a great time, and you know, we just got to keep the positive vibes going and look out for each other. So thanks for hopping on for the pre-post episode, Jack. It's always great to hang out with you virtually, and give us the old sign off, and then we'll end.
All right. This has been another episode of the Real Triathlon Podcast. I'm here with Nicholas Chase and Garrick Lowen in spirit. Peace out.
Perfect. I got ish to do, flying through the sky in my parachute, dancing on the couch like I'm Tommy Cruise on a one-man mission trying to see it through.